The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Believe it or not, it's almost the end of January 2016. Today is the 27th of the month, and we are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docspreferred.com, Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111, planofyourworkouts.com, that's our friend Jason Follner. Remember this, it's a workout book, a log book, after the 24th workout. There's a section to track your progress and set new goals. You can get this at Amazon Prime for $5 and no shipping. Like Jason said, he's not out to make any money really on it all. It's just something that he came up with. He's a Marine. It's very organized. I use it. It's really for $5. It's worth it, believe me. So check that out either on Amazon Prime or planofyourworkouts.com. Also, don't forget this. Unleash your strength with relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. That's by our good friend Steven Santangelo, who's on here every month. He's all over Facebook. You can get a hold of Steven at primalcreations@aol.com or on Facebook, STEPHEN, period, SANTANGELO, period, 75. Tell them Motivation and Muscle sent you. Also, too, StrongerGrip.com. We had Ryan Pitts on yesterday, and I'm going to tell you a little bit in a second about everything. But Stronger Grip has been making handcrafted strength gear for 10 years. Stronger Grip has made high-quality strength gear for the NFL, college teams, Hollywood actors, and arm wrestling. And also, they made trophies for ESPN. Grip gear has been featured in Men's Health magazine, and Stronger Grip has made custom hammers for Mick Dodge and thousands of hard-training, strength-seeking people, just like everybody here. So go out to StrongerGrip.com and tell Ryan we sent you. Also, too, Hearts Collision, that's for New York State residents. That's HeartsCollision.com. 518-477-7937. Tell Lori and Alex we sent you. And also, here's the real good stuff. Go out to the Top 10 Ways to Build Mind and Muscle. It's a free ebook on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Also, Weight Loss Made Easy. Same thing. Just give us your email address. No spam, no nothing. These ebooks have downloaded like crazy. It's just very simple fundamentals, which I believe in that work. So go out and take a shot on yourself. Also, too, our two biggest products to date, Strength Times Power Equals Success in the Winner's Circle. They're both on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Strength Times Power is shot in HD. I narrate every movement. This is most of the exercises in this product is what Dennis used to drop 43 pounds. Dennis demonstrates everything. I think at the time he was below 224. He may have been around 221 even. He did get down to 224. That was the goal. The winner's circle. If you like how I talk and everybody on the show talks with me, you're going to love this package. It's 12 modules, all audio. Talks about how I started, the stuff in between with routines, philosophy, ideas. The routines, you can plug them in, half, the whole thing, whatever you want to do, and where I am today, which is in the power rack, and there's other multiple things in there. You know, I think it's one of the best things out there, just not enough people know yet. Take a shot on yourself. I'm available to help you out with any of this stuff. All you got to do is get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.R.com. Also, sponsorship is gigantic here. We've been talking a lot about this. This is it. This month is still $100. I don't care if you take it on the last hour. We still honor it for next month. Then it goes back up to the regular price. $30 of that money goes to muscular dystrophy. And if you've been following this whole big enterprise the last year or so, my brother Jimmy, basically FBC and M&M, were dedicated to him. Jimmy died of muscular dystrophy, and he got a common cold, believe it or not, and it turned into pneumonia and killed him. My mother was talking about that last night. I had a long talk. He had Duchenne, which is the harshest form of muscular dystrophy you can get. Jimmy lived a lot longer than he should have, but what happens is upper respiratory, they get a cold, it just attacks it, and they can't fight it, and that's how Jimmy died. So it's very important to me, obviously, but we want to work with everybody, help each other build their brand. We're going to be around for a long time, and believe me when I say this, we'll have millions of listeners by the time I'm done with here. We could even be hitting a billion. I'm dead serious about that. So go out to Fiorello Barbell Co. or motivationandmuscle.com. Fill out the form. If you got any questions, there's a way to get a hold of me. And last but not least, if you heard our show yesterday, it was just posted this morning with Ryan Pitts of StrongerGrip.com. FBC and Stronger Grip and M&M have gone into a joint venture here. For anybody that hasn't seen the video of me using this monster sledgehammer that Ryan built for FBC, you got to go out and see it. Well, the most beautiful thing is we're going to run a contest starting February 1st, 2016 through March 17th, which is St. Paddy's Day 2016, which will make it very easy for you to remember. Send in to us the biggest lifts you've done. I don't care what it is. It doesn't matter. You can be lifting cars, throwing stone. I don't care. We want to see everything out there. And the best way to do it, and this is what we want everybody to follow, is when you upload your video to YouTube on the line where basically you would introduce it, make sure you put FBC and Stronger Grip and then dash whatever it is, and you can go down below obviously, and if you want to tell a little bit about the lift, that's even better. Also, we will obviously pick the best one, and you will get the identical hammer that I have. And obviously, if you're a business or whatever you want embossed into the head, you can have that done. Ryan will do that. This is a 25-pound hammer empty with shot. It loads in the handle and it loads in the head, 83 pounds. I mean, it is awesome. It is so balanced. And here's the big kicker out of all this. Whether you're a regular on the show or you're new, and we're not cutting it off. We want anybody that works with it. We don't care. We want somebody to get that sledge, man or woman. You're going to get to come on Motivation and Muscle and do a show with me. So if you've always wanted to come on here and felt, you know, I have so many people say, well, I don't do anything. Yeah, you do. Everybody does. Everybody has something to contribute. You will come on with me, and we will talk from either a half hour to an hour, whatever you're comfortable with. Very easy to do. And we want you to be part of our family. That's the big thing here. That we stress that more than anything. So today we have somebody that is definitely part of my family here. We got Bill Hinburn on with me, and Bill is Bill and I speak a lot offline. I go to Bill at times for things. I like talking to Bill. Bill is a very honest gentleman, and he'll tell me either way, and he likes to give me some shit, and I like that. He's a very, I'll just say a good guy. I don't have to go any more than that. He's very important to this, to FBC and M&M. He probably doesn't realize that, or he'd tell me, no, I'm not, but he is, and I'll say that right on the air. So we got Bill Hinburn on with us today. I want to give you a little bit about Bill. Obviously, if you're familiar with Bill, you know his website is superstrengthtraining.com, but I'm going to give you a little bit about Bill, too. He's a strength historian. To me, he's a strength athlete no matter what, who's dedicated. He's got over 50 years of teaching the value of strength and physical culture. And as I said before, he's the owner of the world-famous superstrength.com, which if you like old school, you like somebody that's really got the knowledge behind it in the books and the material you're looking for, he's the only game in town. And today we're going to talk about somebody that I was always impressed with. I've read a lot about, but I know I don't have the amount of data that Bill has. We're going to talk about Marvin Eder, and man, anybody that likes dips, that's one thing we'll hit for sure. But Bill, welcome to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the invite. As usual, I'm always honored to be here. Most of you probably have heard of me. My name is Bill Hinburn. I have been writing, publishing, and distributing bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, strength training, etc., books, courses, magazines, publications, etc., through my famous catalog and now a website for nearly 50 years. I'm the one that everyone comes to for training information by and about all the big names such as Paul Anderson, Harold Ansorg, Mark Berry, Alan Calvert, Anthony DiTillo, Herman Gorner, George Hackenschmidt, John Grimmick, Thomas Inch, Maxick, Reg Park, etc. I'm also a big fan of Perry Rader's magazine of many years ago, where he got several writers such as Michael J. Salvati, Professor Bradley J. Steiner, another famous friend of mine from years ago. We collaborated on a course as David P. Willoughby. Mm-hmm. So go to my website, www.superstrengthtraining.com, and be sure to sign up for the newsletters, which give a daily dose of valuable information on strength training, tips, secrets, biographies, etc. And for those All right. of you that like the touchy-feely type paper catalog, order my 24-page catalog. It's often referred to as the weightlifter's wish list.
Absolutely, it's a great thing. Before we get on, I don't know if I ever asked you. So I'd be interested. Did you ever meet Anthony DiTillo?
No. Okay. I started correspondence with him early in around 1970, as I did with many other people. I was sending out sometimes 100 letters a day. Back then, of course, again, I reiterate, it's before the internet, so everything was by wagon train, essentially. Yeah. By comparison today, and many people by phone. I talked to him on the phone. He's a very humble gentleman. And I encouraged him after reading several of his training articles in Iron Man. I liked Iron Man. The one thing that set Iron Man magazine apart from the other magazines, it is it seemed as though it was like a gathering. Everybody came to the table, guys that trained in their garage, often referred to as garage gorillas, the guys, cellar dwellers, the guys that, train in their basements with the crude equipment, odd plates, none of them matched or anything. Even out in the backyard, old rusted cogs and wheels and stuff like that. Everybody got together and would discuss their training. It wasn't... you didn't have to be a champion, because the bulk of the people that read these magazines and train, they don't enter contests. They don't enter the bodybuilding or the powerlifting. Yeah, some of them do, but not all of them, And so this was a place where people could discuss things and things that were not commercialized. In other words, somebody may say... in the slick glossy magazines, they would say, if you're going to train with cables, make sure you buy this product, which is a coil cable or a flat rubber cable. Well, in Iron Man, there was one gentleman came by and advertised, and that was my good friend Michael Brown. He invented the expanders that used surgical tubing. And
I got a set.
So it was very simple. You found a medical supply store somewhere. Mm-hmm. If you're anywhere near a hospital, you're near a medical supply, and go in there and say, I'd like to buy some surgical tubing. You buy by the foot. So, you buy that and you're good to go. You loop it tight and not, stand back. Here we go. I can train now, that's just an example of what he was about. And Anthony, I encouraged him to write a book based on several articles. And, like most people, and believe me, I've encouraged several. I used to talk to Grimmick, and I tried to encourage him to write a book. But, he was a guy, and he would often reply in his Jersey accent, who the hell would read it, And that's how he felt. I mean, he was another very humble man. He's like a next door neighbor, he wasn't all into himself, and he couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. But eventually, I got DiTillo to write a book, and then a second book, which are are classics, as you know. You know, they're held very high esteem by many guys that do serious heavy training.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, he was the one, you know, that got me into rack training, because I had bought all the Iron Man I could at the time from you. And, you know, I think when I talked to you, wrote you a letter, I asked you for anything you've got with Anthony DiTillo. So most of the Iron Man, I've got some real old ones too, but the majority of them would probably be, what would he have been, late 60s with Raider, probably to what, early 70s maybe? Would that have been when he wrote the timeline he wrote for Iron Man?
Well, they actually wrote right through, he was still writing when he wrote his books, and his books were published late 70s, and I think one.
Yeah, early 80s, right?
The early 80s, you know. And like I say, the books were the original ones were hardcover, and then they went to softcover, and they're available for me in softcover. And like I say, they're very, very popular.
Awesome books. Yeah, they are.
And I think he's one of the guys that Perry Rader had in his passel of writers, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I like to think of what we're doing here as kind of, you know, we aren't Iron Man, but we try to be a lot of ways like that. I mean, we've got everything from, you know, the echelon right down to the guy that's out in his yard when it's 20 below. And, you know, I told Bill, you know, offline, I spoke with Bill yesterday at length, and, you know, everybody knows we've got Clint Darden on here now, and that's what Clint said to me. He was like, you're the only podcast show, radio show, that's brought together all these big names and anybody else involved. He said, it's amazing what you've done with this, that you've got this, you know, in your camp like this, and everybody is working together. And I was like, I don't know if it was by design or what, but it's working, and it's working spectacular because of the feedback we're getting from so many listeners we've had from the beginning and new ones now. So, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, we're going to keep bringing more and more people in like that because, you know, there's a lot of strong people that you don't know about that are sitting in a backyard training their ass off with some big stuff. Just because they don't compete doesn't mean they're not real strong, you know. So, you know, you never know who you're going to meet or see, you know, that's really been out there that you never heard of. It's very interesting, you know, and not everybody wants to compete. They don't care.
Well, you know, that's very true. And I can add something to that that's important to know. And it's not only in weightlifting or the iron game. It's also in other sports. There have been people, for example, in the penal system, basketball players, there have been some that are just out of this world, but for whatever reason, and an obvious one in that case, they don't get the opportunity to be a walk-on. Same way with football or baseball or stuff like that. There have been some that have come out of the, in fact, in professional baseball, there have been a few that have come out of the penal system, and that's where they were discovered. And, you know, when their time is up, they come out and they sign a professional contract. So you are right on that score with regard to people that just don't care to compete. I've never cared to compete. I don't want to get involved in all the and nothing against the power lifters. God bless every one of them. They're doing what they enjoy. They're getting out there and doing it. That's the most important thing. But I don't want to get involved with all the different federations and all the different, competitions among the federations and all the arguing and all. I have no interest in that for a plastic trophy. I just don't have
a plastic trophy. Well, yeah, you're right, though. No, you're right.
You know, and again, I'm not knocking what they do. They enjoy doing that. And the most important thing is that they're getting out there and they're moving the iron, the camaraderie. I love to see the girls get out there and do it. Hey, because I come from an era when athletics and girls did not mix.
Right. Right.
And I knew one girl when I was growing up. She was a phenomenal softball player. I mean, man. But the whole problem was there was that social stigma. This is around 1960, early 60s, okay? You just didn't do that. And then suddenly, you know, people came to their senses, and girls got involved in serious sports. I don't mean the silly stuff, you know, or just recreational. It was competitive sports. And I got involved in softball, volleyball, you know, basketball, stuff like that. And which is extremely good for them, okay?
Yeah.
And that's the thing I like. The bodybuilding the same way. The politics, and we'll probably talk about that when we discuss Marvin Eater. He's, you know, that's part of it, you know, and the stuff with Arnold in the 1980 Mr. Olympia and stuff like that. It's all you know, it's all planned out and stuff like, and who needs that? It's not really a competition.
You don't.
Okay. It's a display. Right. Call it what it is. It's a display. Everybody gets up there, displays, goes home, you know, and they all get their plastic trophy for, you know, being there, you know, showing up and like that.
You know, I'll tell you what, it's real interesting. The whole political, because let's face it, you and I both know this baloney with competition. It's all political. Everybody tries to make light of it. It's not, but you know, right from World's Strongest Man, it could be down to your local strongman or bodybuilding, whatever it is. And it's like if you're not ready to deal with stuff like that, and you know, I played sports all the way through. I can tell you, being on teams with where the son is the coach's son. And he wasn't very good, and he was starting, and there was people sitting on the pine. That's not a good thing, and I don't like any of that nepotism, favoritism, whatever you want to call it. But that's the way the world works. This is why we do what we do. This is why, you know, I don't have anybody signing my paycheck. It's me. It's because I want to go out and make the rules for myself. I don't want somebody calling the shots for my life. Do I want people to be involved with this? Absolutely. Do I want good people to support what I do and support them? Absolutely. But if you don't want that kind of crap in your life, you got two choices. You go out and create your own stuff, or you just grin and bear it and take it. And, you know, you kind of learn these lessons young. I mean, I had no idea what half this stuff was. I mean, you're playing damn farm baseball. You know, you're 9 years old, and, you know, the father's, the coach's son is pitching, and he's throwing it over like almost the top of the backstop, you know, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here, you know, and you got a kid that's good on the bench that can outthrow this dude, but that's just the way the world works. But I'll tell you what, I think at least once in your life, if you want to do it, you should compete. If you really have worked hard and there's something you want to go after it, but be ready for whatever comes your way, because politics, we know, is a big, big thing, especially nowadays. You're going to have some thick, like, turtle shell skin, and either you go in it with that, with your eyes wide open, or you might be sorely disappointed. So that's just how I see it, Bill. It's I still like tonight. I got to go out, like I was telling Bill. It's not bad here today. It's not as cold as it's been. By the time I go out tonight, it'll probably be 30, which is warm. Got to do dead stop squats out of the power rack, some big heavy calf work, some neck work, and I'll be firing up Ryan's sledgehammer tonight, and I'm done. I want to be out of there in 40 to 45 minutes and be ready, because we're going to be doing some massive stone lifting out of the rack. I would like to break the 400 from last week. Depending on how I'm feeling, it could go anywhere from 4.25 to 450. We're going to be doing probably no more than a 200-pound walk for at least 50 to 60 feet. I would say up and back probably at least 3 to 5 rounds with that. That'll take care of me for a few days, and then we'll be ready to start fighting again. So, Bill, let's talk about Marvin Eater. I mean, we can segue right in, politics right into Marvin Eater, like you said.
Marvin Eater, nicknamed the Biceps from the Bronx.
Yep.
Born in October of 1931. He was the third man and second bodybuilder to bench press 500 pounds at a body weight of 198. He was, he was the first man to do so, weighing less than 200 pounds.
Yep.
He could dip with 450 pounds. He could squat with over 500 pounds. He could do 80 chin-ups, 1,000 parallel dips in 17 minutes. He did crucifixes with dumbbells to the sides. Early on, he started training originally at the East Side Barbell Club, and then later on at Abe Goldberg's gym.
Yep.
He trained with Reg Park for a couple of weeks at Goldberg's gym. So I've got photographs of that. He trained like a maniac. By his own volition, his own admission, he had God-given strong joints and tremendous recovery abilities. He was well above average. He would admit to everybody, "I'm not normal." Okay.
Good.
Incidentally, he was drug-free, and he had no use for drugs or anything like that. Sometimes at the beginning of every training day, he would train and he would advance, do split training, upper body one day, legs in midsection the next. And then as he advanced, he would bring in Olympic lifting along with his training, and he would train four times a week. Mm-hmm. The most amazing thing about this, and once again, the politics of anything rears its ugly head, and that's all based on money. And that's where Hoffman and Weider, they were the two big powers in the United States, forced him into retirement. He's got sick and tired of it. And he retired at the tender age of 22 or 23. Mm. He decided, look, I don't have any appreciable skills to make a living. There's no money in weightlifting and bodybuilding anyway. So he decided to go into plumbing, and he became an extremely successful plumber. At one time, he had 7 trucks, all radioed, men in uniform. He was still very strong, although he had stopped training for, I believe, like 10 years. But he would often people would often see him carry a heavy cast iron bathtub up flights of stairs. Now, let me interject something here. I'm familiar with bathtubs, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking the old cast iron, okay? Porcelain bathtubs. We're not talking about this stuff today that some of it's fiberglass and plastic.
Right.
Now, we're talking about the original cast iron bathtubs. In many cases, it would take 2 or 3, sometimes 4 men to move these. He would carry them up several flights of stairs. Pat Casey, the legendary bench presser, first man to bench press over 600 pounds, said that pound for pound, Marvin Eder was probably the strongest man of all time. And, I'm inclined to agree with him.
Yep. Yep. When you said Pat Casey, was he involved with like Peanuts West and all those guys?
Well,
or not? No,
I don't believe so. And the reason being by virtue of geography, those guys, Casey, Peanut West, and those guys were out on the West Coast, California.
West Coast, okay.
Marvin was born in the Bronx, New York, and I believe he's still there. He's still alive, and
is he really?
He's a.
How old would he be now, Bill? Would he be in his 80s?
84.
Wow. God bless him.
Yeah. And to the best of my knowledge now, the information I have is from when he was like about, I'll say 10 years ago. He was doing 500 crunches every morning, and he was doing dips and curls with 35-pound dumbbells and stuff like that. But you have to understand something, okay? Yeah. He is an unusual individual. Okay. When I met him, he was very personable, very quiet, and appeared to be shy. It's a lot like a lot of the guys from way back when. The activity we're talking about here, of course, bodybuilding and lifting, but it's just from a different era. you know, yep. People from different eras, you know, back then they were humble. Okay. My era is that way and stuff like that. But the thing is, if you look at any of his routines, you know, don't, you know, it's like the old, it's the old disclaimer, you know, don't try this at home, boys and girls,
right.
Because,
right.
You know, this stuff is just unimaginable to do. Okay. And so that in itself is something to behold. And, you know, he would train, of course he started out like most of us, you know, every other day in the three sets of eight and stuff like that. And then, of course, that would it wouldn't fulfill his energy and what have you. So many times, believe it or not, he trained 6 days a week, 7 hours a day.
Jeez.
I mean, who trains 7 hours a day?
Nobody.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes the sets were up to 15 per body part and stuff like that. And sometimes he would do splits, you know, he'd train in the morning and then he'd train in the evening and stuff like that. But the sad thing, the tragic thing is, again, due to money.
Yep,
you know, if you wanted to clean up anything, politics, world politics or anything, take the money out of the equation. Gramick once told me, he says, hey, you know, we all trained together. This is back in the late, well, even during the 30s and the 40s. He says, we'd all train. We all knew each other. He says, we'd go to the contests and, you know, you had York. A lot of these guys are on the same team. They're all from York, okay?
Yep.
Other guys were from other parts of the country. They would train and say there was a bodybuilding contest or there was a – you know, back then, of course, you had to be, you know, you had to lift a weight and, you know, and then, you know, in the last 30, 40 years, you didn't, or 30 years anyway, they took weightlifting right out of it, which, again, that's a travesty as far as I'm concerned. But he said we would all train and we go to the contests and, you know, the winner would get a plastic trophy. And well, it was metal, I guess, pot metal or something, you know, but
sure.
There was no money. You didn't get any money. What is, you know, he would say, what is this money? We didn't get any money. And, you know, we went out and had a big dinner afterwards and the camaraderie, camaraderie was there. We'd all go home the next day. We'd all train at the gym again, you know. The publicity was maybe we'd get a blurb in the local newspaper, you know, on the back page, you know, and it was written by somebody who either didn't know anything about weightlifting or bodybuilding or didn't like it. And so it wasn't really
right.
You know, anything positive, you know, and you'd see your picture in there, you know, and that would be it. But that was how it was. And then, of course, the politics was behind the scene because the AAU, of course, Hoffman was in that, and Weider could not try as he might. He tried to get involved in the AAU, and knowing him as his character, he would try to take it over, you know, so he could benefit it. So he could benefit from it commercially, as Hoffman.
Sure.
Hoffman benefited. You know, a lot of people will badmouth Hoffman, but I have to tell you, if it wasn't for Bob Hoffman, you probably wouldn't have had any representation by the United States in Olympic weightlifting. I mean, you simply don't have it. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that has to be kept firmly in people's minds. Yes, he made money from it through his magazine and advertising the fact he had a York Barbell Club and stuff like that. And he would sell a pile of barbells, you know, he sold that.
Yeah.
There was one year during the, I want to say during the 40s, he sold, I think it was in 1 year, he sold 200,000 sets.
Wow.
Of various barbells, okay?
Wow.
But the whole, well, he had a very, he owned his own foundry, and he
right.
had a,
right.
you know, he had a monopoly on the market. The only other, serious, well, maybe there was a couple of them, but the only other serious foundry in Barbell, it was Burr Barbell out of New Jersey, and later Florida. But that was the thing about that. You know, Weider didn't have the benefit of owning his own foundry, okay? But the rift that went on, you know, the only people that lost would I should say gained from it would be Weider and Hoffman. You know, they're constantly battling each other. And the people who suffer, of course, are the contestants and the kid that trains in his basement, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Marvin Eater, if he didn't get in that mess and – you know, they paid these guys something decent. I think he would have been a phenom. I mean, he would have been a champion probably for a while. I think. You look.
He retired at 23.
I know.
He had a healthy. I mean, I think it's reasonable to say that he had a good 10 years. Grimmick won Mr. America in 1940. I believe he was 30 years of age. Okay.
Right.
So I think it's safe to say that Marvin Eater had another 10 years. And the unique thing about it is he was not only very strong.
Yeah.
But he was a very competent Olympic lifter. Overhead lifts and stuff like that, and a bodybuilder at the same time. So you can just imagine what he would do with the Mr. America contest if he wasn't banned, and it was Hoffman that was behind it. Okay, yep. Hoffman was the one that was was behind that, and Marvin could see the handwriting on the wall. You know, and I didn't do this anymore, and. And besides that, there's no future. And I'm, you know, like I said earlier, he's spending all these hours a day training. Yep. You know, what was he doing to make a living? But he was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have to, you know, support himself. I'm guessing. I don't know. But, 7 hours a day, I don't know what else you're doing. But I think that he realized he's a smart man. By the way, I believe some type of, I want to say invention or something, in the works in New York. I can't remember what it is, something to do with plumbing, but, he's a very shrewd man and he knew he could see it. So he wanted to get into a trade and plumbing is tough work. He did some nasty work and stuff like that, but he earned his master's certificate license in plumbing and started his own business. Like I said, he had a number of men working for him, 7 trucks. So he made a very good living from it. He's smart. But you see a lot of guys that are in that, especially prior to the money, the big money that Weider started to throw into it in the mid-60s. Prior to that, what did they do? I mean, they live on a beach. You couldn't make a living from it. John Grimmick was one. He was fortunate enough to be hired by Hoffman. York, Reg Park was another one, you know, but a few people had gyms, but with the gyms and everything, you have to keep in mind that you win the Mr. America or Mr. Whatever, Mr. Who's-its, 1 year, you could open your gym, but the next year somebody else wins it, they forget about you.
Absolutely, but. The thing that I liked about Eater, and that was like even all the guys back in those eras, man, I mean, they weren't just bodybuilders, you know, like today. I mean, they were accomplished athletes. I mean, how many guys even today, think about it, can friggin' put 300 pounds over their head?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, Bill, you know. I mean, look, we've talked about this before, you and I. I mean, I don't think I've talked to you recently on this, but – when Bill Crawford was on here about 3 weeks ago, we had talked about just the transference of power to stones and how difficult it is. And he had some guy that he had known, I don't know if it was from his church or whatever, was asking him, can I come over and lift some stones with you? Blah, blah, blah. This guy was well over 300 pounds. You know, he had like a 700-pound deadlift, et cetera, et cetera. He was no rookie to the game. Well, let me tell you, when he came over, I don't think the stone was any more than 250, and that's a huge stone. If you've never lifted him, I mean, 150 is big. He couldn't get it off the ground. I mean, his fingers were bleeding, literally. And, you know, we can talk about grip, which I've realized through you and now a lot of other people that, I'll tell you right now, the weakest point will, the weak link will not allow you, no matter how strong you are all over. And the wrists, the hand, and especially the fingers, if they are not developed fully and strong, I don't care how strong you are at anything, you will not pick a stone up off the ground. If you go to Iceland and try to lift that 418-pound stone off the ground, and your hands are not what they need to be to lift that stone, you can have the biggest shoulder girdle, the biggest hip girdle, the biggest butt and hamstrings to explode stuff, and I guarantee you, maybe you get it a couple inches off the ground, but you're not picking that thing up and walk or carrying it around the sheep pen. So that's why when I see a guy like Marvin Eater, think about this, everybody, 400-pound plus in a dip. Do you realize what that at 198? And I think I read, correct me if I'm wrong, did he go as high as about 225 in body weight? I thought I read.
I don't believe he...
He never went that high? Okay, maybe I'm
not,
wrong.
I wouldn't swear to it. I don't know. Okay. I know that he was toted to be under 200 for a lot of... Let's make something real clear. I like to be objective about this. I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression.
Yep.
A lot of people will say, well, were these official lifts, you know, recognized by the officials and stuff like that? And he will come right out and tell you, no, but they were witnessed. By people in the game. As far as I'm concerned, that's good enough for me. The official stuff, I think that's a matter of formality and stuff like that. But I think a witness, several witnesses, for me anyway, I would like to think at least three witnesses for any particular lift, as far as I'm concerned, justifies, you know, that it did occur. But you are so right about grip. Grip is the weakest link. Yep. As you can see, in many cases, people will try to augment their lifting records by putting on a lot of gear. And I don't mean steroids. What I'm speaking of is, you know, the straps, the shirts, and good God,
the
suit, water, all the stuff. Okay.
Yep.
It's you know, to boost their bottom line, and God bless them. Okay. I know the thrill of being able to do, somebody does a 500-pound or stuff like that and all that. But honestly, who are you kidding? Okay. You can inflate anything like that. But I honestly feel that, with lifting odd objects, which of course stones are part of it, you know, whether you're doing a stone, barrels, bags, you know, it's not the same as lifting a dumbbell or a barbell. You know, those are both pieces of equipment that are designed to lift, and they're designed to fit. The size of the bar is designed to fit most people's hands. It's not a thick bar. The thicker the bar, the bigger problem you're going to have lifting it. You know, you get up to a 3-inch a 3-inch bar, and your grip is really going to come into play. And that is why a 1-inch bar, originally with the barbells and everything, some of the barbells back in the day around the turn of the century, Ellen Calvert, some of them were hollow. They were nothing more than something the equivalent of water pipe. Actually, a three-quarter inch inside diameter black pipe. Okay, so and the reason for that is so somebody will start out, say they're a teenager or whatever, they could get their hands around it and they won't be frustrated. Sure, they could have made them 2-inch. Sure, why not? But the kid couldn't lift it. He would have to develop his grip for months before he could get any reasonable amount of weight up that would develop the rest of his body. So that's the thing with the grip is vitally important. Grip strength is very popular nowadays because of that. You know, deadlifting is a very good, and I mean without straps or anything, deadlifting is a very good exercise for the development of the grip.
Yep, definitely. You know, the whole thing is the errors were different. The politics are basically the same. And you know what? I think he did. My opinion is he did the best thing he knew what to do with. And look how, like you said, he became very successful with obviously a plumbing company. He was wise enough. He's not like a lot of these guys that go on forever, especially back in the day. They had no income. They had to find a girlfriend to live with or whatever they were up to just to keep them afloat. That's no life like that. But I'll tell you one thing. For a guy that worked a very short amount of time, my God, man, you know, think about what he accomplished in that short amount of time. You don't see a lot of athletes like that, and that's what gives me pause just to, you know, say that, because it's like you can go a lifetime and not move numbers that guy did. I mean, and let's go with a 198er. I mean, you know, that's what cracks me up. Everything today is this is why I think a lot of stuff's gotten skewed in strength. Everything now is how much can you lift? All right. Now, a lot of people we know are specializers. So you might have one guy that's okay in the other lifts, but say he's a deadlifter that can pull 900 any day of the week, all right? But this is either something they were very good at, and I hate using the word genetically, but their body was more set up for this. So they excelled at it. They loved it, all right? They got it done. And the other thing, too, now, and you know this, you know, everybody's like, well, how much do you weigh? How big are you? Well, that doesn't equate, because I'll just give the quick example. I'll shift right back to you, Bill. I remember when we had Randall Strassen on here and we got talking about today's world's strongest man. And let's face it, the top three guys, even though Zivikas isn't, you know, 6'9" like Thor and Brian Shaw, but these guys are all tipping anywhere from 365 to like 4 and change, okay? So I brought up Ahola because I always thought Ahola, in my opinion, was one of the best because, like Marvin Eder, it seemed like there was nothing he couldn't do, all right? So you got a 198er and a 275er. We'll go. I think that usually was his max weight for Ahola. And Randall said to me, he goes, there's no way he could compete today. Same with Kazmaier, different eras. But here's a difference I see in these two guys is this. I think mentally they could adapt to today's guy. I think both of those guys mentally were pretty damn tough. And I would love, and I wish we could do it, I would love to see Kazmaier mixed in and Ahola mixed in with Thor and Zivikas and Brian Shaw right now. Now, to be honest with you, I don't know. Zivikas is still a point or a half a point with these guys. I've heard all kinds of things from other strongmen that he's had a lot of injuries that he hasn't even, you know, talked about or anything, but he has had some issues. The point of the matter is, just like a Marvin Eder, I don't follow bodybuilding, so I don't know what they're using for weights. I know the only one I know that they ever used to talk about was Dorian Yates. That was more like a power lifter slash bodybuilder slash strong stuff. But I don't know any of the other ones, and I don't care to know about it. What I'm saying is I think each one of these three men could have adapted to today's world, and I still think they could have won. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the human anatomy and mentality, you know, let's face it, we just didn't crawl out of the water yesterday, okay? We've been around
right.
Zillions of years, okay? And the reason we're still around is adaptation. You know, there's a lot of animals, a lot of mammals. Let's just take mammals, for example, that are extinct. They could not adapt. Okay. And the strongest shall survive. We adapt to different circumstances. And you know, if there was a catastrophic occurrence, not because of our physical capabilities, but because of our mental capabilities, especially in the form of the frontal lobe of our brain. We can imagine, we can communicate, we have opposing digits, okay? All of this plays into the fact that we would survive. It would be us and the cockroaches, you know? I mean, face it, you know?
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, with a lot of this comparing, you know, I've got in discussions, you know, over a beer, and I really love to discuss a lot of the strength events and stuff like that. Hey, you know, pitting Muhammad Ali against, say, Joe Lewis or the Brockton Blockbuster, Rocky Marciano.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, that's an ongoing discussion. Mike Tyson against Muhammad Ali. You're talking about different eras. You're talking about different times. Okay.
Yep.
You're again money. You know. How much money was involved in this? What type of training conditions do they have? What do they know about nutrition? You know, all of this stuff plays into it. So you can't compare today's lifter. I'll stay on page with you and just keep it on the lifting and leave you know, bodybuilding for another discussion. We'll talk about just strength. Let's compare Marvin Eater with you know, some of the guys today, okay? But it's a different time, you know. You have winners today in strength on particular lifts, okay? A guy can deadlift over 1,000 pounds, okay?
Yep.
But what can he do in the bench press? See?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
You know, there are lifters over the years that had a pet lift. Okay. For example, Bob Peoples, he was Mr. Deadlift. Okay.
Absolutely.
He liked that lift. And if you like something, you're more apt to do it. And if you're more apt to do it, you're more apt to get better at it and faster at it. Okay. And he could deadlift. Could he bench? Well, yeah. But he didn't care for benching. He was not designed for benching. Now pay close attention, because he had long arms.
Exactly.
He had long arms and long legs, okay? The long legs were not really a positive thing for deadlifting, but nevertheless, he had those long arms. He had a short torso, so his shoulders were closer to the weight, okay? He could reach down and he could pull. Okay. Now overhead lifts, not so good. But you take other guys, you know, it's just like having a push-up contest with a short-armed Hercules. Okay. The short arms are going to hurt you because they have the mechanical advantage. And this was something that you have to bear in mind when you're comparing various lifters to each other. And your point about grip. Okay.
Yep.
You can have all other types of body strength down. You can have, like you said, the shoulder girdle, the hip girdle. You can have all sorts of strength in your lower back, upper back. I don't care what it is. Okay. If you don't have those hooks, okay.
You got
that grip.
It. Yeah.
That's it. Okay. And like I've often said, you heard me say it. In Olympic lifting, for example. You can go up against, if you know how to, if you have your body technique down for a particular Olympic lift, you can take on somebody that is considerably stronger than you and beat them. Because I've often said that the quick lifts, and there's only two left now, they are a total act of body coordination.
Yep.
And the average individual, and this is why I feel, and I hope it does, I hope it never happens, but Olympic lifting is being looked at, because the average individual out on the street does not understand the sport. There's two lifts, okay? Imagine track and field and having only two running events, okay?
Exactly. Yep.
You've only got two, okay? Furthermore, when you with those two events are combined, okay, for medals.
Yeah.
In other words, you are the best at those two events. Whereas somebody in track and field will get a medal in each of the individual events. You follow me?
Yep.
It isn't, you know, so that's something to seriously look at. But the thing, the average person on the street does not understand Olympic. They think weightlifting. Okay.
Right.
They think strength.
Right.
And that's where they leave it, because they don't understand that when you start learning Olympic lifts, the coach stands there, points to the bar, empty bar on the floor, and shows you the form.
Yep.
And you practice with that empty bar for months to get your form in before he puts any weight on that bar.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, you know, as long as we're talking about size and stuff, our mutual friend Adam T. Glass, I mean, look at the grip on that gentleman, and he's gone against everybody, you name them out there. I mean, I remember a few years back he was saying that, he was going against guys twice his body weight, and the only guy that beat him with the one grip contest was Odd Hagen. I mean, and at the time, I think he said he was 62. He just turned 65. So the thing is, I mean, I want to think how he put this. How did Steve Jack say that? And it never left me. And now I don't know if I've got it right. It was something to the effect like, you're only beaten basically when you admit to being beaten. And that there's so much to that. And I mean, if you've got the confidence to walk into something and you know you've done your homework, I mean, let's face it, a lot of these guys can beat you alone on body weight. But as we've just made reference to all this, body weight and what you do, pulling a bar, pressing a bar, et cetera, does not equate to finger, hand, and grip strength. Now, are you going to have much more than an average guy or gal walking around? Absolutely. But we're talking about lifting serious, serious rocks or whatever, and it's totally different. So when we look at those eras of people, we look at, you know, Aholas and Kazmaiers and, you know, Marvin Eaters and all that, I agree totally with you. I think that they had the mental fortitude and attitude where I do believe they could adapt. And what they lacked maybe in another 100 pounds or more, they had it between the ears, maybe more so, and a lot of times that will win over any opponent. So that's it. I mean, that's really what I believe you got to do and carry it out. And if you want to do it, fine. If not, like we said, stay in your backyard, down your cellar, be the cellar dweller, up in a nice hot attic when it's 100 degrees out in the summer. You know, out in the woods, and you look at Brian Zurich. If for anybody that hasn't seen him on Facebook, I would tell you to friend him. He's on this show. He'll be coming up soon again. That guy's out in every extreme component of weather. And if you've seen him, he's always lifting logs or pulling chains or pulling logs with chains or this, that, and the other thing. This guy trains explicitly outside, and he's awesome. He's a guy that basically he was falling apart, drinking too much, you know, working a lot, this, that, and the other thing, always sick. Well, he decided to finally go out and take a voyage into physical strength and physical culture. This guy now, he's the whole flip side of a 360, and he is energetic, he's strong, he's leaned out the way he wants to, he eats the way he should now, and he's a whole different guy. It's like you took somebody that, you know, you'd say, geez, this guy, you'll be lucky if he lasts to 40. He's taken and morphed his whole body and gone backwards in time, where the guy feels younger, looks younger, acts younger, trains like a young man. It can be done. So I'll leave it at that, Bill. Summarize anything you'd like with this, then give everybody your information. I'll give mine, and hang on the line if you would, please.
My humble opinion, Marvin Eater is arguably one of the greatest bodybuilders, combination weightlifters of all time, pound for pound, can't be beaten. His potential was never realized. A tragedy. Anyway, again, my name is Bill Hinburn. Most of you have probably heard of me, and I've been writing, publishing, distributing bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, strength, books, courses, and magazines for nearly 50 years. Go to my website, www.superstrengthtraining.com. Be sure to sign up for my free daily newsletter, which gives you a daily dose of secrets, tips, biographies, inspiration, motivation, education, and entertainment, as you well know, right, Eric?
Absolutely, sir. Yeah, you got to talk to Bill off Skype because he's entertaining when we got shows, but he's a good time. I'll say this, and I can't speak for Bill, but I know from experience, like everybody on this show, if you need to get a hold of a human voice, you can get a hold of these guys, and Bill's one of them too, because I know for a fact I've got feedback from people that have called the guests on this show. So that makes me very happy. It's nice that our listeners can get in touch with these folks and, you know, ask questions, order things, you know, send some support their way. But, you know, all of us then get to make new friends too, and that's what it's all about. You know, like Bill said with Perry Rader, if there was a model I could live off of, I'd be very happy to be called the Perry Rader of podcasting, I'll tell you that. Brought people together, Bill.
He sure
brought
did.
People together. Yep, and that's what we're doing here. I told you what Clint Darden said, and that's what we're here to do. It's real important. You got everything out, Bill?
I do, and thank you again very kindly.
Anytime. I love having you on. This is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docspreferred.com. Dr. Wong will be on with us Friday at 3:45, I believe he's on. It's been a while, too. We didn't have him on in December, so I can't wait, and everybody's looking forward to that. SoarinX.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Don't forget, too, PlanOfYourWorkouts.com. And you can also go out to Amazon Prime and order it for $5. It's a logbook. I guarantee you, you'll love it. Check it out. Give Jason a little bit of love, as I say. Unleash your strength with relentless metabolic endurance through 100% wholesome organic foods. Don't forget, Athlete's Choice is the only product with these ultimate results you're looking for. That's Steven Santangelo. As I said, he's on here every month. Primal Creations at AOL.com. Facebook, STEPHEN, period, SANTANGELO.75. Tell them we sent you. StrongerGrip.com. They've been making handcrafted strength gear for 10 years. They make high-quality strength gear for the NFL, college teams, Hollywood actors, arm wrestling, and the trophies you've seen on ESPN. They've also been featured in Men's Health magazine, and they make custom hammers for Mick Dodge and obviously the thousands of hard trainers like all of us out there that are looking for these unique pieces of equipment. StrongerGrip.com. Also, the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle on Fiorella Barbell Co. Free ebook, change your life, change your thinking, take action, and away we go. Just give me your email, and I promise you, you'll love it. Also, Strength Times Power Equals Success in the Winner's Circle, both out on FiorellaBarbellCo.com. Same thing. They're the best two products I've got on my own. I stand behind everything. Everything that you see on these, we've done. There's nothing I put out that I haven't done, and that's just the way it is. That's called authenticity and honesty, man, and that's what we're lacking a lot of these days. So go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com. Change your life, change your future, and obviously if you need any help, I'm more than willing to help anybody out, so check that out. I also forgot Hearts Collision. Don't forget that's for New York State residents, 518-477-7937. Tell Alex and Lori we sent you. Also, too, I've always said sponsorship is gigantic. This is the last month to get on here for $100 a month. 5 to 15 shows a week. This week alone, I'm doing 12 shows, all right? So that's not bad. That's low for me. Like I said, we're going to be around for at least 25 years. We're going to be millions and millions strong with our listeners, our family. And like I said, $30, no matter what we charge monthly for sponsorship, goes to MDA. And hopefully once winter is over, we'll find somewhere else to donate the money to. So $30 goes to muscular dystrophy for flu shots. That's a big thing. We want to do that. So All I can tell you is to go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. Fill out the form if you have any questions. FiorellaBarbell@NICAP.R.com. I'll answer anything I can. So check that out. Be part of our family and help MDA and Motivation Muscle, too, because it's a big nut to run this show every month, okay? FiorellaBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a five-star review. That's what everybody has. I thank everybody for that. On Facebook, Fiorella Barbell, Motivation and Muscle. If you need to get a hold of us or you'd like a specific show for Bill and I to do, FiorellaBarbell@NICAP.R.com. And I'll leave you with this. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to give words, encouragement. You know, words are very, very special, and they can be very good or very damaging. Words hit harder than a punch to the face, believe me. And our job here is to help people out. We're not going to be all fluff and everything with you. We're probably going to be pretty rigid and tough with things, but we're behind you, and that's what we plan on always doing. And we're here to help you out. We're here to give you a hand. So think about that. Next, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. Those were important words. I never realized those till I got a little bit older. A lot of things your parents tell you, you kind of dismiss when you're a kid. But when you get a little older, you figure, man, they knew a lot more than you thought they did. And those verses, those sentences definitely equate bigger today, I think, than ever. Next, if you're going to go out like me tonight and lift, go out and beat up some iron, bend some iron, take some stones, turn them into dust, go out and do some big, heavy squats. That's what I'm doing tonight. Big calf work, big neck work, and we're going to be using Ryan's sledge, the FBC sledge. I'll be crashing that tire under the moonlight tonight with the lights all on. Extremely fun. Next, as I always say, the Hoosa Steel Crusher. As domination and blood red on both sides, we are domination. Like I said, we are millions strong. We clear cut paths. We don't follow any paths. And as I always say, no one will ever clip our balls. And as Russell Furr says, who's a big time listener, has been on Motivation and Muscle, when I listen to your show, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. We will listen to that and say that until the day I go off the air, because it's vital and very important. I thank you, Russell, for that. And don't forget, too, the big contest to win the same sledgehammer that Ryan sent me. All you have to do, it starts February 1st and goes right to March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So you shouldn't forget that at all. Enter in video your biggest lift. We don't care what it is. Send it. But when you upload it to YouTube, please don't forget this. Put FBC and stronger grip on the heading line, and then put a dash what you're doing. And down below, obviously, you can explain the lift if you'd like. You have to do that, or we will not be able to find your video. On the 17th, we will make either on that day or the day after, we will make it will be the cutoff that day. I'm sure within a few days, we will make the announcement. Whoever wins that hammer, obviously, you can get embossed into the head, whatever you want. It's 25 pounds empty. 83 shot loaded. It loads the handle and the head. And here's the big thing, too. You get to come on Motivation Muscle here and do a show with me. I think that's pretty damn good. You'll have a good time, and I'm sure Bill can attest to having fun on the show, too. That's all we got today. Bill Hinburn, thank you very much for coming on, sir.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So for Bill Hinburn, this is Eric Fiorello, and I always say, be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the side of the road. Get involved. Tell a friend about us. Spread the word. We are coming for you. Come join our family. So have a great week, and Bill will be on again in 2 weeks. Have a good week, everybody, and go out and do something real productive. It really does matter.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.